Chapter 70. The Silver Fox. Dulcie's brougham was waiting on Huntley Street, a maroon four-wheeler, with the Brockwood crest of a silver fox crossed by two swords on the door. It was a clear, dry night, though a light wind was getting up.
"This is Geoffrey,"
Dulcie introduced her coachman with a familiarity towards her servant that would have shocked my guardian. "You can always rely on a Geoffrey," I said, for it was also my father's name. On the back were two burly footmen, both professional pugilists in their day, Dulcie assured us, and the older man, Lenny, grinned almost toothlessly to lend weight to her story. I sat facing forwards with Harriet at my side, Dulcie and Sally opposite us, holding hands.
"Shall we do that?"
Harriet asked, and our fingers intertwined. It was a long, slow journey. Geoffrey was highly skilled at pushing into gaps that looked narrower than our carriage to me, and the footman had no compunction about lashing out at beggars or urchins who tried to slow us down. But a brougham takes up a lot of road, and the streets were increasingly narrow and crowded with pedestrians, and it seemed forever before we pulled up in the square. Harriet slid towards me.
"Whatever happens, I love you." I felt her tremble.
"Tell me that when we get back to Huntley Street," I said softly, and raised my voice.
"Last chance to change your minds."
"Tosh,"
Dulcie said, as the younger footman lowered the steps and opened the door.
"I love you too," I whispered to Harriet, and she kissed me.
The square was deserted. Geoffrey was down from his seat and prowling the peripheries, his whip at the ready. He bestrode the whole area before rejoining us.
"It is not my place, m'lady,"
he towered over his mistress,
"but I would be much happier if me and the men could follow at a discreet distance."
"And who will look after the horses?" she inquired. Geoffrey flapped a leather-gloved hand.
"Oh, they can look after themselves. Black Bess would break the skull of any man who came too close."
He scanned the unglazed windows all around us.
"But if you're really worried, Dick can stay. They trust him."
Dulcie touched his sleeve. "I appreciate your concern, Geoffrey, and I am truly grateful for the offer. But we are all armed and alert, and we have a plan."
"Your father
will never know," she assured him.
"The trouble is, two or three big men like you might frighten our quarry away," I explained.
"Very well,"
Geoffrey agreed reluctantly.
"But at least take this."
He reached behind his head and lifted a cord over his hat to hand her a huge antique silver whistle.
"Any trouble, and you give that a blast. Hear it halfway across London on a quiet night like this."
"Thank you, Geoffrey."
Dulcie hung it around her neck. She craned up, and for a moment I thought she was going to kiss her coachman. But she only told him conspiratorially,
"I spotted a nice old pub 3 streets back.
Geoffrey broke into a broad grin.
"So did I, my lady. The ship in, but we will stay here and wait for your signal."
"I could go and fetch a jug,"
Dick, the younger footman, offered hopefully.
"We will all stay here,"
Geoffrey said firmly, ignoring their disgruntled moans.
"Did you remember the lamps?" I asked.
And Lenny clambered back up to open the postillion box, handing down 4 lanterns one at a time for his colleague to light. I had learned one thing from my experiences at Scarfield Manor, the stupidity of stumbling about in the dark. But we might just have managed without them that night, for the moon was full, and the sky was the clearest I had ever seen in London. The wind was coming in gusts now, as it often did near the river. It made Dick's task more difficult, but it had blown the fumes away.
"We should all keep our handbags undone," I advised. "You do not want to be fiddling with clasps in an emergency."
I had toyed with the idea of taking my father's old service revolver. It was far more cumbersome than Harriet's dainty weapon, the only present her husband had ever given her, she had joked once. But mine was capable, my father had boasted, of bringing down a rhinoceros.
"Not too many of those grazing in Limehouse,"
Harriet had told me. She knew I would not carry a gun, but pressed a black-handled one on me. "A starting pistol," she had explained.
but it looks like the real thing and makes enough of a bang to get the little devils running on sports day.
I unclipped my bag and put the gun on top. It was quite light, but looked real enough to me. We went as a group down the road, turning right, then left, then through a maze of passageways, some occupied by sleepers, one by a sprawling drunk who clung to Sally's skirt until she twisted his finger back. We stood at the top of Card Street, really no more than a gap between the long rows of backyards, and chosen as our main route because it was long and straight, and we had studied our map at the club until we knew exactly where all the other alleys crossed, or came off it, and where they led to. There was no danger of getting lost if we stuck to the main route. A woman lay at the top of the street, curled on the stones with two skinny children in her arms. I put a coin into her outstretched hand, and she took it weakly without opening her eyes. Her children were breathing rapidly, and I resolved to get them to a doctor upon our return. Sally turned her wick down.
"I do not want to frighten him off," she said, "before he sees our bait."
"Probably the first time I have been called that," Dulcie squeezed her friend's shoulder. "If he is around, the chances are he will try something on our way home, when he will expect us to be befuddled with opium," I forecast. "But we cannot be sure of that, so take care, stick together, and no heroics." We all hugged, and Sally went ahead, tentative at first, but soon getting into a confident stride. A baby cried somewhere, and a cat shot out, making Sally jump, but she kept going. There was an unnamed, very narrow alley on the left after about 30 yards. She stopped, turned her wick up a fraction and peered down it, stepping just inside before reaching out to wave the lamp in signal that the way was clear. Dulcie stepped round the woman. Sally emerged and started down again, and Dulcie blew us a kiss before setting off after her.
"Lord, if I were a man, I would be sniffing round her," Harriet whispered, as Dulcie strolled as elegantly as any woman could along a narrow cobbled alley with a rubbish-strewn central gully, and I could see what she meant. Dulcie was not only a beautiful woman, but she oozed her beauty in a way that most of us could only dream of. Sally was going faster now, a dark shape in the darkness, but it did not really matter, for she would wait at the next crossroads for Dulcie to get past the first side street. Dulcie paused as she reached it until she saw Sally's lamp flare up, perhaps another 30 yards ahead, and waved to urge her on. Dulcie carried on. Harriet and I set off after her with a quick glance over our shoulders. Geoffrey stood watching us uneasily. The surface was more uneven than I had imagined, and slippery, probably from a sewage overflow. But we made the first alley without incident, just as Dulcie made the second, and Sally stopped to check the third. We all passed on our way. The fourth break was another very narrow alley, and we had to wait a while before Sally was satisfied it was safe. We turned right at the end towards where we had calculated the Golden Dragon to be, and then left. I had never seen the streets so quiet. Sally reached another junction and stopped to check it. The lantern swung to signal the way was safe, and then went out. "Damn!" I strained to see. "I hope she has a Lucifer. Oh, it is all right." The lamp reappeared, turned very low, and we could only see it rise and fall like a firefly, so far from us now. Dulcie set off after it, turning her light up to negotiate a pile of filth and to make herself more visible. "Perhaps we should try a busier street." Harriet hitched her dress to step over a greasy puddle. "Yes," I agreed. "Nobody is likely to be looking for a victim in such a place. Why is it so deserted?" Dulcie reached the narrow turn-off and was about to saunter past when she stopped.
"What?"
She stepped towards the alley, and Harriet touched my arm. We hesitated.
"Sally!"
Dulcie put her lamp down.
"What is it?"
we called in unison.
"Oh, my God! Sally!"
Dulcie stepped into the gap, and her lamp went out.
"Stay there!" I shouted. "Wait for us!" Harriet and I hurtled along the street, slithering and nearly falling over each other in our rush.
"If something is wrong, blow your whistle."
I pushed ahead. It was then I heard a sob and the sound of drumming boots and a scuffle.
"Shoot into the air, Harriet,"
I called, skidding so badly that I crashed into the wall as I swung round to the left. Harriet's gun shattered the silence, the explosion ricocheting in every direction. Sally lay crumpled. I held up my lamp and saw a darkness frothing from her breast. I kneeled in the pool and Sally wheezed.
"Oh, Sally, darling," I whispered and cried out, "Dulcie! Dulcie, can you hear me?"
There were more scufflings, and then from behind me a rush and the figure of a man hurtling towards me, flinging me face down on top of Sally, her breath grunting bloodily into my mouth.